Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 346, I think. Thank you for tuning in. I'm joined this week by Getz. I love Getz. I've known Getz a minute and I've been a fan for a bit more. We did this in person. This was the first podcast I've done in person in a long old time. And the reason we were able to do that was because Warner hooked us up with a COVID safe space. Essentially, so they set us a room at Warner. They've all been working from home for ages, so they set us up a room in the Warner building, which has hardly anyone in. So none of the office workers are in, one or two of just the building type workers. So they set us up a room there that was all cleaned and then closed. It was a studio room, so it's all airtight. So cleaned out and then closed. They set the mics up so that we could be 2 meters apart, like across the table. They set me up a parking space so I didn't have to use public transport to get there. So I got to drive in and not come in contact with anyone. And then on arrival, I mean, I'm telling you all this because it was cool. I've not done any of this kind of thing yet. On arrival, they had these camera things that take your temperature and stuff like that. So we had to stand there and get scanned and then analysed. And we had to have a mask on. We'd take our mask off for the scan. So the temperature check. So basically from when I got out of my car, I had a mask on. They scan your temperature. And then everyone in the building has got masks on. And we go up. And then when we're in our little room and we've had all our checks and tests, we could go and take our masks off and have a conversation. So yeah, as you'll see from the Polaroid, we got to meet up in person. So that was good fun. If this is your first time tuning in. Oh, another thing. I mentioned this interview on the Dizzy episode because I talked to Dizzy about a story that Getz tells me in this. And it's really good. As I said, this is one of my favourite chats I've had on the podcast. But this was coming out now because of release schedules and the new music that we talk about. We needed it out now to promote that. But yeah, if this is your first time tuning in, then check out the Dizzy episode, the Kano episode, the Ashley Waters episode, the Wretch episode, the Mike Skinner / The Streets episode, Kate Tempest episode, Roots Maneuver episode. There's loads of good previous guests from the world of UK hip-hop and grime. So, yeah, all worth having a listen. There's a lot of similarities in the approach and outlook of Getz and Kano, and that's because, as you'll hear, they came up together and were very much influencing each other. So yeah, this is episode 346, I think I've got that right, of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Getz. Right, I'm here today with Getz. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. How are you holding up in the COVID madness? I saw you getting annoyed at people complaining about the heat, so I assume you're taking the heat well.
Yeah, I'm taking the heat well, but do you know, I just feel like we've just become a nation of complainers about every single thing. Like, yeah. No one's happy because when it's cold here, everyone's like, "Oh, shit, grey country, like." Got to fly away, can't wait to get on holiday. Holiday blues. Da-da-da-da-da. Nice, hot. You know,
and then you're saying? Right as well, because people have been complaining that because of COVID, they can't go on holiday. And then suddenly the holiday comes to them, and it's a problem as well.
I could understand if it was people that was working.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's saying that. I totally get that. Like, I totally get that working in the heat. It's not ideal.
Yeah.
But these are people that are just literally chilling.
Off and relaxing.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I feel you. So how are you finding all the pandemic situation? Because prior to that, you were gearing up to tour.
Yeah, I toured. I ended up touring.
Did tour.
I think I had the last show in England.
Oh, really?
Literally. Like, wow. On the Friday, I had my London date. And then after that, there was no venue shut and everything. Yeah. So I think I was the last person. But with COVID, it's just strange. I don't know what to totally make of it. I know it's out there. I know that. I don't want to be disrespectful and be like, it's a hoax.
Yeah,
when
of course.
I know there are some people have definitely passed from it. I'm not sure really what's going on, because one thing is this and it's that, and then the rules change and then you can get it, and it's the most deadly virus in the world, but you can wear this mask that will help you not get the most deadliest virus in the world,
yeah,
which doesn't make sense. And then you can be 2 meters away and not get it, but any closer, 1.9 meters, you'll get like...
it's the mixed messages, isn't it? I think as well, it's the problem, part of the problem with that is that it's a global thing.
Yeah.
So, and we're now a global people.
Yeah.
You know, we're not just hearing the message from our government.
Yeah, yeah.
We're hearing the message from the American government and the Australian government, and they're all different.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what makes it so confusing. Yeah. I mean, our government, in my opinion, have been shit, but... That aside, there's so many mixed messages out there. It's impossible to be that clear and focused on it.
And it's so much focus on the actual sickness, and there's not enough information on how to boost your immune system.
Yeah, that's definitely not being talked about enough.
That's vital information.
That healthiness, supplements, all these different things are really good for...
Exactly, to fight it. If you do, you should take them things anyway, but... Why are we not speaking about it in the height of a pandemic then? Like, why is it not being, why is that not the focus? Hey guys, here's how to improve your immune system, and you know what I'm saying? And hopefully, God willing, you don't get it, but if you do, this will really help you to fight it. So, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I agree. It's a weird one. Well, let's not get bogged down in pandemic stuff heat stuff and all that kind of thing. I was thinking when we were arranging this, you probably won't remember the first time we met, because I opened for Bizzle at one of Bizzle's album launches, and we met there briefly.
That must have been...
It was way back.
We're talking 15 years.
Yeah. It was a minute ago. And the reason I remember is you were someone I'd heard a lot about but hadn't heard yet. I'd heard your live performances. Yeah. The reason we got a lot of gigs in the day was... We went hard live,
and that
was our thing. But I remember being nervous about that gig because we had this one song that everyone saw as our song that was having a go at grime or UK hip hop, but it wasn't. It was just saying grime blew up and it's amazing. But in my opinion, artistically, a lot of people got lazy and it didn't keep progressing. It came as a progression. It came as a progression from Garage and all these other things.
Well, we stand in agreement.
yeah, exactly. I've heard you speak on it since, and it's a weird one, and it happens every time it blows up. It blows up because of changes and evolutions, and then a load of people get in line and start making the same thing.
Yeah.
And something that yourself, I've had Kano on the podcast as well. Mm. I think he's prime for it. I've had Rich on, he's another one that you're all people have gone, right, this is dope. Where can we take it?
Yeah.
Where can I push this?
Yeah.
So has that always been kind of important to you?
Yeah, that's one of the most important things to me, not to sound like ghetto of old or even how I sounded on the last project.
Yeah.
I kind of want to listen to every project and hear progression.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I kind of put myself in a consumer's shoes, but my own consumer of me, I need to hear progression in terms of sonically, even the message and delivery style. So that's something, that's always at the forefront of my mind.
I love that.
I can't even listen to, this is going to sound crazy, but I can't. A lot of people love posting my old projects and I can't even listen to them.
I'm exactly the same, man. I had to re-release something on vinyl recently. Yeah. And I had to, because it's my label, I had to go over the masters.
Yeah.
I've got fans who are excited about that reissue and all that. I can't listen because I want to progress as an artist. That's what you want to be aiming
at.
I can
hear so many issues when I listen to my old music. Yeah. Oh, why didn't you say it like that? Why did you deliver that? You know what I'm saying? I actually want to redo it.
Yeah.
I just want to redo it. You know what I'm saying?
It's funny because you mentioned not wanting to sound like ghetto of old, and grime is a genre as well that there's so much talk of, oh, you've changed, and shit like that. Like when it happened in punk, it happens in all scenes that start from grassroots working class people. Mm. If you get successful or a level of success, there can be a backlash. and you've changed or you're not keeping it real or whatever can be seen as an insult. Whereas, again, change should be part of your evolution,
if
right?
If you don't change, you're not keeping it real.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
If I sound like the 18-year-old, 19-year-old version of me with the same message, what's authentic about that?
Yeah.
Most of the fans have actually seen me grow up in front of their eyes. You know what I'm saying? They've seen me have children. They've seen me move out. You know what I'm saying? All of these things you're aware of. How can I not have music that also reflects that?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we don't talk about the past sometimes in reflection. Yeah, it's sick to do that, talk about in reflection. But one thing it cannot sound like, that's happening right now.
Yeah.
Because that's not authentic.
Yeah.
Those are not my feelings on day to day. You know what I'm saying? So I always say to people when some people request like I make another freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And I always say this, like I'm not your time machine. I understand that music is, if you was in a place at that time, what the consumer doesn't understand sometimes is that it's attached with memories. So it almost makes you think the music is better than it actually was, if I'm being totally honest.
Because
attached with certain...
When you heard it, where you were.
Yeah, it's attached with those sort of... You're growing up. Maybe this is the first music you're getting into. You're out with your friends. For some, those were the better days.
Yeah.
So when you hear those music, it takes you back to your better days. But I cannot act as somebody's time machine at this point. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That music is there. You can listen to it. And that's there. But listening to me now should feel like I love it because I've grown with him.
Yeah. And you couldn't have made freedom of speech if you were someone that would be stuck in a time machine,
exactly.
Essentially. Like the first track I had that got in the charts was a track called Thou Shalt Always Kill. And literally... Every time something big happens in the news, I have people tweet me saying, you need to update. And this came out in 2006. Yeah, yeah. They're like, you need to update. This needs to, you need to do a new version. Yeah. And my thing is always, you do a new version.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the beat's out there. Yeah. The beat's out there for free. You do a new version. I'm doing other stuff, you know.
I think I tweeted something quite similar. I said, you are not as creative as you think you are if you're always trying to recreate what you've already done.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like when people say to me, do a version of this song or re-release a version of this song. I understand, but at the same time, I feel like I have so much more in my locker. And I'm just like a music nerd. I'm a proper music nerd where it's not my only... I probably listen to my genre of music the least.
Yeah.
I'm always listening to other genres of music and just taking in different flavours. And, you know what I'm saying? To the point where... When people are around me for a little while, they start ringing me and say to me, man, because of you, I can't enjoy music no more because you got me listening to things like The Mix. Like, what do I know about me?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, man, I'm sorry about that, man.
But that's how you evolve, right? It's learning what excites you about all different genres. It's funny, you mentioned there people asking you to do a version of this track or a version of that track, and we're going to jump all over your timeline here. Yeah. This isn't a linear narrative.
Yeah.
But one of the things in one of your periods of blowing up and getting attention was when you were jumping on established beats and you were killing it and getting a name, because everyone was doing that at the time.
That was the thing.
And your thing seemed to be, I need to be the one that they're talking about or the one that
was the thing.
Someone wants to be better than my version of this Jay-Z beat or this note or whatever else.
Yeah.
So how was that at that period to just go, right, in a way, you've got that easy, here's your starting point.
Yeah.
It's not like when you're creating a record now, where you're like, well, where do I begin?
Yeah, exactly.
They're going, you've started, off and running.
That's right.
Now, can you sprint?
I was following the American blueprint.
Yeah.
In terms of like the way they used to do the mixtapes, and they'll do the versions of the biggest songs that were out at that moment. And because I never had much producer relationships when I was making 2000 and Life, that was just the easiest thing to do. And at the time, you can go to the market and get instrumental CDs. So that's what I used to do. I'd be in the markets, buying the instrumental CDs and write versions of these songs, which were mostly rap.
At
the time when I made 2000 and Life. So yeah, and that's how I got heard. And then from then, I started going to different places. And because producers had heard what I was capable of, I started building my own relationships. And then by the time I got round to Ghetto Gospel, the first one, it was all original beats.
Yeah. And what I always liked, again, was a similar outlook
Like when I started off, I'd turn up outside other people's gigs and I'd do performances.
Yeah.
But what I'd make sure, I wouldn't ask for money. I don't want to be busking. Yeah, I think people have a bad reaction to that.
Yeah.
But I'd want to leave them with a flyer that's got my details on so they can find more. And one of the things I always liked about you on the pirate radio days and all that was you were there not just to fire up that room. You were there to sell something as well. Yeah, you were there to say, here's my album.
Yeah, there was a
product. You know, here's my fire in the booth or whatever else, but here's my record.
Yeah,
rather than just that moment.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm just a fan of body of works.
Yeah.
Graham's a weird thing. This is the truth. You have consumers who love you on radio, sometimes don't buy into the body of work, but love it on radio. And I understand that. It's a room full of artists, heightened energy, going back to back.
Yeah,
sick thing, I understand that. But I was always there, like you said, to promote a body of work because the radio wasn't playing singles from us. So in my head, I always think, how am I going to get the word out or raise awareness, so to speak, that I've got an actual project out? And that's what it's always got to lead to. So when we was doing Sailor Return with the Real Deals, the Big Apples, Rhythm Division, I guess what was helping me when people went into the shop, they was already familiar with my radio presence, pirate radio presence. So when they saw the body of work sometimes, and that's how I built a fan base away from the normal mechanics of the grime scene.
Yeah.
I built a fan base away from it because I had a body of work also because I raised awareness through pirate radio.
Yeah, so. I love that because, again, it's that, like, people will talk all the time about, like, I started this podcast. I had a radio show on Radio X and someone said to me, why are you doing it for someone else?
Mm.
I was like, yeah, I've always had that. Like, so why was I? And it's a similar thing there. Why purely go and improve the body of work of, for example, Charlie Slough, and respect to Charlie Slough, Fire in the Booth of one of the most amazing series, but why simply build his body of work when you can promote your own body of work and have that, do both at the same time, like everyone wins.
Yeah.
So, I mean, rewinding back, you talk about a love of music. Growing up, was music in your house?
Yeah,
was it a big thing?
Yeah, but not like commercial music or hard rap. It was more... Dad was a big fan of Jamiroquai.
Yeah.
I'm from a gospel, like a church background.
Yeah.
So Fred Hammond, Kurt Franklin, the Winans, this was like really rampant in the house.
Because that's music that has an energy as well. And again, you've been known live particularly for that, for bringing that energy. Yeah. That's not music that they just put on and here's the song. It's like, encapsulates it. It takes
the
moment.
And I guess the most commercial things I was exposed to would obviously be maybe a Michael Jackson, Boyz II Men.
Yeah.
And then I started watching The Box. Do you remember The Box?
Yeah.
You have to, what was it? You had to text in or call.
Yeah.
I remember just waiting hours.
Text and request.
I remember
hours
on end. You know what I'm saying? For certain videos to come round.
Because the videos had a number as well, didn't they? So you had to like text the number of the video that you want.
Exactly. Then I was really into garage.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing in my area, being around people and whatnot. And this garage, the garage scene was amazing to me. I kind of missed drum and bass.
Yeah.
But Skibidi and Shabba had a crazy effect on me because one day I was watching MTV Bass at my friend's house and I remember they had some weird black and white video, seemed like 007 themed.
Yeah.
And I just remember feeling like that's something I wanted to do when I grow up. I just remember feeling that. So I wasn't heavy into drum and bass, not until Stormman, after Stormman's grime period, he got into drum and bass real heavy.
Yeah.
Became a heavyweight over there, and he used to take me to the shows because I feel like drum and bass is maybe have a beautiful blueprint for the economics of how they run things,
right?
The level of shows that they do and how big the shows are, but without
and the take packs and stuff and like that as well. The secondary income overlooked a lot of the time.
Without being super mainstream, like someone that maybe not into drum and bass might be like, drum and bass is dead. But go and see the shows that they're doing on a weekday.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You see, that's interesting because that does reflect your career as well. Because when, like, everyone always talks back to Channel U days in that heyday of crime. But you didn't really blow up that much on Channel U, right? You were outside of that in the real world kind of thing.
Channel U was a weird thing for me because
it was amazing. It exposed me to loads of stuff. But I remember you misremember stuff. You think of Kano and Getz and all these. It's like, no, you weren't, you weren't in the club.
So what was weird about that? Obviously, we had a thing going on before YouTube and Channel U and all of those things from Tape Pack days.
Yeah.
Channel U came. I'd done Top 3 Selected as my first video.
Yeah.
Wasn't really in heavy rotation like that. And I was like, wow, maybe I want to meet the guy that runs Channel U.
Yeah.
And I remember Don't Phone Me and Sing For Me was actually made for the Channel U demographic because I felt like Top 3 Selected didn't do so well on there. You know what I'm saying? So Don't Phone Me was kind of like, I knew it would be all the kids' ringtones.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I knew it would be all their ringtones. So released that via there and that done good. But with Channel U, I'm not a Channel U baby, basically. Basically.
That's it. So going back again, like what kind of upbringing did you have? Like was it a strict family? It was East London?
East London. Very, very strict family. Very, very, very strict. But I guess like I wouldn't say bad, but I was very mischievous. I wasn't allowed out. So I used to run away from home, like from an early age. My mum would tell you I used to run away from home from nine. You know, like when most kids pretend to pack the bag.
I was the
kid that packed the bag and left.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? When I think of it now, I think it gives me shivers because I think, what was my mum going through at that time? Nine years old and I'd be gone for like a day. You know what I'm saying? And then come back maybe early hours of the morning. But that's because I wasn't allowed out. And outside always fascinated me so much. And then when I was a bit older, like 11, 12, I'd be gone for like days on ends.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then return. So even just in my time of doing that, I'd be off to like, I'd go Trocadero or things like that, travel the trains. You know, I'll just be everywhere. Right. I'd be everywhere because my energy is, since a child, it's been very hard to contain my energy. That's why I feel like music's been a great savior for me.
Yeah.
Because it holds my attention and I feel like I'm releasing a lot of energy via that. If I didn't have music, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it seems undeniable when you know that, because again, a lot of people know you kind of found music in a Young Offenders prison, right? So I noted it down, you were stabbed at 13.
Yeah.
And that was before knife crime was this epidemic that everyone's talking about. So that must have been a scary thing. And then, by 15, you were in a Young Offenders prison. How was that period? Was that your kind of, out of the house now?
That was one of the greatest periods of my life.
Really?
Because I say that not to glamorize jail, because it's not glamorous at all. But I say that because I had learned so much. I had learned that this is the sort of place that I don't want to come back to, number one.
Mm-hmm.
I had read so many books in there. I had done so many courses from bricklaying to music to gym courses. So even just like coming home, not having a clear structure to my dream, because I didn't. I would love to say, yes, I wrote this down. I knew this was going to happen. Step one, step two, step three, step four. That never happened. But I already knew Stormin at this point. I knew Sharky Major. I knew Dizzy Rascal at this point. I even remember having a conversation with Dizzy Rascal from jail and just really asking him for advice. I knew Lethal B at that point as well. So what was amazing for me, I would read magazines and see people that was like in my friendship pairs. And
that's amazingly inspirational, right? Exactly. Knowing it's an option.
Exactly. So knowing that was an option, maybe when I got home, brush up on my skills. Another thing, I'm in a place where at that age, people don't really encourage you to follow your dreams. What was strange about when I used to spit on the wing, I had a close friend, he's no longer here, Lee Wallace. And a guy called Stannerman, they would encourage me to go in the direction of music.
Yeah.
So I was lucky. Where, like, you know what I'm saying? They would always say to me, nah. And we could all spit.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily think I was the best one out of them. You know what I'm saying? But they would always say, yeah, when you come home, trust me, trust me. Like, trust me, just trust me. Spit, 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 spit. Rap, 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 rap. So that encouragement there. And even just coming home and having certain fast track routes because of the area I'm from, one of Graham's birthplaces, and the people that I'm actually friends with. Not that I didn't have to put in my own work, but I will consider those little fast track options where the first week I was in Jammer Studio, you know, like a legendary basement where so many people have gone and done legendary things from. So just seeing just those moments, I remember those moments and I do hold them dearly.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the idea of credible role models, of having people to look up to. I spoke ages ago with a Carla about the myth of black-on-black crime.
Yeah.
And again, for anyone who doesn't know, just a brief thing, it is a myth because it's the crime is poverty-driven.
Yeah.
The highest crime rate in the UK of gang crime and knife crime is Glasgow.
Yeah.
They happen to be white, so no one talks about it as white on white. Liverpool is similar. It just happens in London, the poverty is largely in the black community, so it's known as black-on-black crime. But that myth is used to anger white people, but it's also used... It also brainwashes young black kids into making it a reality.
Yeah.
If you feel your only option is being on road or being a bad man or whatever, then that's your only way to make money. That's your only way to pay rent.
Yeah.
That's the only way to look after your family. Then that becomes that. And again, I spoke to Kano about the fact, as stupid as it sounds, him doing modelling and acting and rapping is showing these kids that there's loads of options. Yeah. It's not just sports or grime
and
or road. You know, and, you know what I mean? It's, like, there's more than that.
Now we have managers.
Yeah.
We have accountants. There's so many more options. You know what I'm saying? What's beautiful, I guess, about this generation is that it's not necessarily academics. You know what I'm saying? Parents can now nurture their children.
Yeah,
the ones that don't seem too academically strong, you know what I'm saying? I was one of those. My mum always nurtured my other abilities.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So she's over the moon when the crime stopped. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she started nurturing the ability of my interest, you know?
Yeah. I love that. It's interesting as well because it's got warped over the years because of the way our prisons are run, and particularly in America, the way it's this privatised industry of prison. But prison isn't meant to be punishment. It's meant to be reformative. That's the point. That's the point of it. And your story is important because of that, because that's literally how it went down. You could have gone in there and gone deeper down.
Yeah.
But you had music teachers and you had things like that. And I want to talk about that kind of inside and outside of prison, because the history of grime gets always, the respect always goes to your pirate radio stations, and rightfully so, but there's what gets talked about a lot less that's just as important is the workshops. Like the workshop was a big thing to go, look, here's somewhere where you can come and record, here's somewhere where you can do this.
Facts. I remember even doing 2000 and Life, my cousin, same age as me, big up Richard Hines, he was like one of the teens in a youth club in Raynham that he would work with younger children.
Yeah.
They happened to have a studio. My first recordings of 2000 and Life, my first mixtape, was from a youth club. Obviously, I never had no money at that time, so this was a great thing for me. Unfortunately, halfway through the mixtape, the studio got robbed. But I remember being down for like a week or so, and just in my head I felt like I was going to use that as an excuse to pack it all in.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, my cousin had bought a Mac and a mic and set it up at his brother's house, Ian, and we got back to work. But this is where I learned that sometimes the first recording might not be the recording, because when I started, when I had to re-record the songs, they were better.
Yeah.
Because I knew the lyric more, you know what I'm saying?
So
there was no hesitation in saying it, and then when there's no hesitation in saying a lyric, it comes across more confident.
Completely. It's what you were saying earlier about listening back to old music.
Yeah.
Before you get into music, you think an album is finished when you record it and when you press it, and then you tour a record and you realise an album is finished after that tour.
Facts.
You go back and listen and go, oh, is that how that goes? Because that's not how that goes. Yeah. That's a surprise to me.
You find different pockets of saying things and you realise, wow, like, why didn't I say it like this on the record?
Yeah.
This was
but it's because
better.
You didn't know it then. Yeah, you didn't know it. It was new to you.
Yeah.
So are you someone who steps back and reflects on these things? Because I saw a picture of you recently in a studio with Akala and that. And is that, it's down in near Bath or Bristol, isn't it?
That's in Bath called Real World. Lovely studio.
I've been in there before and it's just crazy. Amazing. These panoramic views,
in the countryside,
so much,
the river.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. You have to go over a little drawbridge to get into that thing. Yeah. So when you were doing workshop recording sessions or in your cousin's brother's house kind of thing. And then you probably would have thought, man, I got in Jammer Studio as this is this big step up. Do you take time to reflect and go, look at what we're doing and look at where we've come?
I always know. How I kind of assess my dreams is that, okay, who I am today from jail was very far-fetched.
Yeah.
So the next step might seem like it's far-fetched, but because you've made that step already and outside your inner circle, people might have, like, when I was saying what I was saying in jail, outside of my inner circle, it was an unrealistic thing I was saying, right?
Completely.
Until I see some of those guys now, and it's nothing but love and respect, because they remember me as a teenager, mouthy teenager, very confident teenager, saying these things that have come into fruition now. You know what I'm saying? So when I look ahead and I feel like, okay, for what I'm thinking in my mind seems very far-fetched. And I might not say at this point, but I know what I want. And I know that it's a possibility. Because it might even be easier because the transition has been made already.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Before, the transition hadn't been made. So there was a lot of things holding me back in terms of just my empower. The transition's been made now. So that might even be easier than the first leap that I had to make.
Yeah, and I think there's all of these things come from hard work, but I think a lot of people are blessed and lucky in that when that first unrealistic thing you're aiming for happens, because then it means you can have that mentality of anything's achievable. 100%. If that first one hadn't happened, you might start to rein things in. But 100%. Coming out of prison, for example, and getting in Nasty Crew with people like Jammer and DEE and Kano, who were all legends of the scene, established. So to get in that, that would have seemed unachievable. Mm. So to have that kind of first thing happen probably then gives you that drive to go, I can do anything. As stupid as that sounds, it's like, no, I can do anything. Because as a kid locked up with no potential future, I'm now in a few years, here I am.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about as well, because this is purely because of where I grew up, but you talked about the birth of the East London grime scene. Obviously, that started to spread. Stuff was going on in South London, a little bit in North London. But people don't talk about, because it was a niche scene, it was popping up in other places as well. And I went to school in Southend-on-Sea.
Ah, so you know,
and Southend was somewhere that had, it was somewhere that had these things. And at that point, you'd travel for these opportunities and these chances.
Big up Deco.
Right, yeah.
Deco, I think Deco. Yeah, I think that's his name, 100%. But so Southend would be the first place out of Newham and Tower Hamlets and maybe Watford, where you had a fan base because of Beats to Battle.
Yeah.
And you're right, we don't speak about Beats to Battle. Beats to Battle was like a regular rave that was always packed with people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Even looking back now, had classic clashes. I think Wiley vs. All In One was in Beats to Battle, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Early days. And that's in my first, so I kept my first, I don't know where they are now, but I kept my first 100 flyers.
Yeah.
And most of them was Beats to Battle.
Amazing. Yeah. And that's it, because again, people always put restrictions on themselves and go, because of where I live, I can't be involved in that or this and that. And one thing I learned early on was half of the clubs or venues I was dying to get involved with, you get there and really it's 30 people, 40 people, 50, and then climbing and climbing. Mm. But it happened because there was a small group who said, well, let's just do it then. Mm. Rather than we're not in London or we're not even in specifically Newham.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've gone, well, let's just do it here. Let's do our own. And that's a massively motivational thing, right? To know that you just need to go out and chase it yourself.
Yeah, definitely, man.
You spoke a little bit about the second time you record a track, it might be better.
Yeah.
The first time we met properly, Richard Russell, I was doing a track with Richard Russell and he got you in to do a bit on that. And it didn't work out in the end. The way he did the beat, it never came about. But it was the first time I met you and I liked it because I'm someone who writes everything out in advance and goes over it and changes this and changes that. But at that period, at least, you were very much, I want to turn up and I want to feel it and I want to see what happens. And the only mistake that we made there was the track was going to master in the next day. So Richard was like, right, we either get it or we don't. It was one of them. But is that your process still, kind of not really write it down, just kind of...
Still like that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, still, but...
But you write in your head in advance still a bit and things like that, right?
Yeah, so what's really weird is that Fade to Black by Jay-Z, his session with Rick Rubin, 99 Problems, when I saw him not write, when he was writing in his head and he held the whole tune in his head, I thought was one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen from a rapper. And I'm very much a rapper about skill, and that was just like the holy grail for me, being able to do that. And so I could always hold like maybe 4 to 8 bars, but never like 64s. And then I'll kept practicing it. And then till now, till today, I can do it. But what I found is that I write differently when it's in my head to pen and paper. So sometimes, depending on what song it is and what kind of pocket I'm going for, I may write it down just sometimes, but mostly it's in my head,
I love that, because speaking of the American mixtape culture, Lil Wayne is one that's always said that and done that. And I've never heard anyone seem so comfortable on the mic, seem so relaxed.
Yeah.
And again, that's inspirational. Well, can we talk about live a little bit? Because I remember you and me chatted, I was in meeting, I can't remember what I was in for, I was somewhere in White City, and your manager was there and we chatted briefly, but I think it was in between A Rebel With A Cause and Ghetto Gospel, and you were really adamant about changing up your live performances. Yeah. And again, to give some history of how I became exposed to you, I'd heard about you live, and then I saw some videos and stuff, and you've got that energy, you've got that thing that makes people not be able to look away. So I was then surprised to listen and find that you're a lyricist.
Yeah.
You're not a hype kind of, here's just the energy. That's the thing that comes across.
Do you know why it's funny that you say that? Because I fully well understand that, without blowing my own trumpet, that's a very unusual thing.
Yeah, it is.
Lyricists are normally very calm, get the point across.
Yeah.
If we look at the list of lyricists worldwide, they're not hype. They don't have that. So... yeah, it's a niche, but
Niles sounds like he's barely got out of bed on most records, and it's the most intense, like this beautiful, but it's not that energy.
I didn't recognize this until people started putting me in the categories of people that wasn't lyricists. I could tell that, okay, you think it's the same thing that we're doing just because he's got energy. Yeah, it's a total different
thing. And again, they're all good skills. Yeah, it's like
they're all good skills.
A lot of battlers or clashers don't write good records.
Yeah,
I don't mean to be harsh, but it's just the case.
It's facts.
Often people who write good records can't clash. Like,
I'm glad you brought that up as well, because
they're both good. They're both legit skills. You don't have to be able to do both.
In grime, they think, you see, like if you've beat somebody in a clash or somebody's beat you in a clash, they think that makes them automatically or you automatically better than they are. Wrong.
Yeah.
When people ask me like my top 5 or top 3 or whatever, it gets technical because I look at it from a very different standpoint. I'm very much into music, so I take music in the way you should take music in. And by that I mean saying that there's boxes, right? Very few people tick all boxes.
Right.
Very few.
Yeah.
To be a lyricist and to be a great performer, delivery, the flow. Sometimes lyricism's boring.
Yeah.
Like, let's have it right. Sometimes,
completely.
Sometimes it's very boring to hear. It's not
particularly live.
Exactly.
Particularly live, it can have no energy at all. It can be
so,
really.
So it's a thin line, and very people tick all those boxes. My top three, top five, they tick a lot of those boxes.
Mm.
Like, I go and see, even some people I like listening to their music, I've left their performances thinking, oh man, oh.
I'm the same.
It
man.
Doesn't mean I'm not going to enjoy your music anymore, but I just might not come to another show.
It's something that hip hop in general suffered from a lot, I think, in the early days, because there was a lot of studio rappers who would then get up live and just rap as if they're in the studio. And again, it's the only reason I got this live following when I came out was I grew up listening to rap, but I also grew up listening to punk.
Yeah.
And punk was the exact opposite.
Yeah.
It sounds awful in the studio, but live, fuck me, it sounds amazing. So it was trying to bring that energy even on the more lyrical tracks and things like that, and going, right, now let's have a party here.
Well, one of the greatest things about grime is that it's actually, we didn't know at the time, but hindsight 2020, it's training grounds, you know, for being able to project your voice, being able to hold the mic correctly, and move about a bit, you know what I'm saying? Even like, I don't know if you remember seeing on the DVDs that sometimes you'd have to wrap the wire around.
Yeah.
That's preparing you for slight technical issues that you might have during your show. Don't panic. You know, it's okay. It's going to be right. You know how to control a crowd, even if there's a technical issue.
Yeah.
You know, you might not be aware of this technical issue, but you're not going to fold. You know how to get swiftly past that.
And to explain that, Tony, so a wrap in the wire gives you control over the connection.
Yeah, the connection.
From the wire into the mic. Yeah. It's not just loose. It's not going to come on and off. It's like, well, if it's in, it's in.
Yeah.
And you've got that.
And
that
even sometimes control. If there was a short, for some reason, wrapping it around would kind of hold that short, the 40 short. So,
and
then
again, if you'd watched MCs in films or whatever else, they're cupping the mic, they're doing all this kind of stuff, which cause feedback will ruin a live show.
I'm not going to lie to you, though. I still cup the mic.
It looks better. It's the simple fact.
It feels better as well. It felt like when I try and... I always start my show holding the mic correctly.
And then as soon as you get that...
10 seconds in, I'm cupping the mic.
I bet your sound man is what am I going to do?
He's looking at me like... Oh,
we did this whole sound check and you held the mic correctly as soon as the gig starts.
You know, it's super hard.
You can't help that. But as I said, well, I mean, evolving your live show has been key to you. And again, that's where you build that audience, right? Rather than just being, I'm jumping on the mic in a club.
Yeah.
To like, I'm putting on a show. And Kano, again, a prime example of his shows he did
before lockdown.
Just gone with orchestras and all sorts. Yeah. It's a show. It's not a gig. It's a show.
Yeah, yeah. My little brother's a big part to play this. He's my actual band MD.
Right.
Like, the guy is, he's pretty much like, you know, one of those people who doesn't care for the props and all of that, but the guy is literally insane. He plays three instruments, does the MD stuff. He's actually got three new cuts on my new record, to be fair, but he's just insane, and I'm inspired by him in terms of just leveling it up, you know. Don't get me wrong, me and Rukid have a great segment in the show, but still, I do the band thing because there's certain records like Black Rose and Next to Kin and that just sound sonically better with a band.
And that's the important thing there, is noticing what adds to the performance and what doesn't. A lot of people go through that simple thing of, I've upped my venue size, I need to add a band.
Yeah.
And I've got a band playing songs that don't need a band or aren't improved by a band.
Yes, exactly.
So it's making that right choice of going, here's what's improving, here's what... No, let's just go back to a DJ or let's plug in a fucking iPod.
That's exactly what I do, because a lot of grime records don't sound great with a band.
Yeah.
They don't.
Completely.
And if we do use
that energy and that authenticity to it.
And sometimes if we do use a band, what my brother would do, he'll program the actual sounds.
Yeah.
Into the band. So if it's like, you know, sometimes the changeover between DJ and band could be long, it's awkward in the show sometimes. If we're going to have that moment, he programs the actual sounds into the drum kit, the electric drum kit.
Wicked.
And so it just sounds, it sounds exactly the same, but it's the band playing it.
I love that. And I love that choosing to take that energy. So going back again, you jumped in into Nasty Crew, and then Kano left and you left.
Yeah.
Was that still a level of confidence at the time of, right, I'm making my moves? Right?
You know what?
Was there any doubt?
If I be very honest with you, it wasn't. We left because of a miscommunication and how some members were reacting to things. If I'm being totally honest, like, I'm not going to bullshit you. It was more, in hindsight, had we all been a bit maturer.
Yeah.
You know, I put myself in that. I can't speak for anyone else, but I put myself in that as well. If we sat down and had a different type of conversation, who knows? It might still be going on today, because now today everyone's all cool.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, for me, I thought that was going to be forever, to be fair, but it wasn't, you know? And even... What's weird about just me as a person, anybody that's, I overpay homage. I overcompensate in homage, if I'm being honest with you.
Right.
Because I always feel like anybody that's given me a helping hand in any way, you've made my journey easier. I can't have a falling out with anybody that's helped me along my journey publicly.
Right. Yeah.
Just because I'm just, it doesn't mean I've had to put in so much work on my own and do things, but even because I felt Marcus Nasty helped me, I returned that same favour to Griminal, which is his little brother.
When I had
the chance to help him, he was already doing his thing anyway in my area, but because I was doing it on a bigger scale, I shed some light on him. You know what I'm saying? That's just how I am as a person.
I love that, and it shows that evolution that you spoke about. You spoke about, I can't be doing the rap I was doing at 18 because I'm not the guy I was at 18 anymore. I spoke to Kano and to Dr. Adam Elliott Cooper about credible role models that, and non-judgmental role models, so you can talk to these kids who might be going down the wrong paths or getting in the wrong paths, and it's not some white government member saying you're going the wrong way. It's going, look, I've done this, I've been there, here's what's ahead. And that came out a lot in New Testament.
Yeah.
You know, you spoke, and it's not easy again, because you will instantly get people going, oh, you've changed, or you're not real anymore, and all this.
I proper don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know what, like, if I'm being honest with you, I proper don't give a shit. I feel like those type of people stunted my growth for so long. I should have been 100%. Here earlier. I felt like I made this transition after 2000 in life when I got to Ghetto Gospel. But the way Ghetto Gospel was received at the time in comparison to 2000 in life, I don't think people was ready for that. And I wasn't ready enough. I wasn't ready for that because I immediately switched back. Now, people say freedom of speech is a classic. Freedom of speech is basically made because I felt like Ghetto Gospel wasn't embraced. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go insane. I'm going to make the darkest, you know what I'm saying? But conforming what people, I've said this many times, we always speak about conforming to the mainstream. 100%. No one ever speaks about conforming the other way when most people conform the other way around.
Yeah.
It's facts.
Yeah.
There's people that are not doing the things that they're talking about, making it sound like it's a reality right now. In mass numbers.
Yeah.
That's mass numbers. It's not mass numbers conforming to making a pop record right now. It's mass numbers talking about stuff they don't do. But no one has a problem when it's conforming to that side.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's conforming also. That's conforming to something that you know works.
Yeah.
So that's why you want to sound like that.
And it's exploitative. It's going, I know that this market, I know that they're hungry for this.
Exactly.
I can go and do that.
But no one talks about conforming that way.
Yeah.
So for me, both are fake. Conforming either way. It's just like, that's why I don't give a shit when anybody really says, and like, oh, you're not as hard as you was. I feel like that's a compliment.
Yeah. I love it. And it's backed up as well, because through pushing in those extra, those other directions and pushing yourself, you had a track like Black Rose, which gets nominated for an Ivor Novello.
Yeah.
And it's a song, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a song about a young black black women being told they're ugly, essentially. And it's fucking, it's beautiful and it's powerful and it's an important message that is going to reach outside of that pandering to what you're meant to be pandering to where you're meant to stay in your place, in your corner or whatever. So how was that to get that kind of, that nod from us, I guess, outside of your scene and outside of your community?
That felt amazing because what I've done in the past with records like that is not shot videos for them.
Right,
And we're now in a video day and age. So, you know, even though I may have had records touching on certain subjects before, I haven't really done videos with them. So the surface listeners, which most people are surface listeners, you know, like singles and whatnot, but how surface listeners viewed me was totally incorrect. You know what I'm saying? Because I say this, I always believe that an album is a chapter in your autobiography. By the time your career finishes, you should have many chapters of in your autobiography, but there should be growth. You know what I'm saying? And we're telling a story. There's many different situations. So if you're going to paint the bad, paint the good as well, because good's happening, you know?
Yeah.
Like, good's happening. It's not just bad. It's not just bad, you know what I'm saying? I find it weird to listen to somebody's full project sometimes and not hear about a relationship. I think that's strange. Like,
you're not
in a relationship of any kind.
Yeah.
How's your mum? You got any kids? You got, like, what's happening?
Yeah.
You're not painting the full picture.
Yeah.
Why do you keep painting this picture 15 times over on one record in a different way? Like, what's happening? Shouldn't there be different concepts? Because in life, there's so many different emotions, love, hatred, fear. You know what I'm saying? And if you're totally at one with yourself and as confident as everybody makes out they are, then we shouldn't have problems tapping into these different emotions that as human beings, we all feel.
Yeah.
So I can talk about, yes, I got tunes like Artillery and whatnot, but there's tunes like Understand, there's tunes like Blessed with a Gift, there's tunes like Tess, Next to Kin, Black Rose, and so on and so on and so on. But that's because they represent me on a whole.
Yeah.
You know, my music represents everything I'm going through. So it's not just da 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 all the time, because my life ain't da 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 all the time.
Yeah.
There's lovely moments, man. There's dates. You know what I'm saying?
And that warrants documenting, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's children. There's children.
Particularly if you're looking at it as an autobiography, that needs to be in there. But so, I mean, it doesn't get talked about much, and it's going to sound so fucking privileged, but music is hard to do.
Yeah.
And Grime is the biggest example of that. There's been so many MCs that have come and gone that blow up or that have got mad, mad talent, but don't continue there. Despite opportunities and despite potential and despite skill. So how do you make sure that you get to finish your autobiography that you're writing in these records,
right? I don't know, man. I just... One, my friend, he's out there. He said that I'm completely obsessed with music. Yeah. I love it. And I think that's what it may be. You know, people have tried to make it a job for me. It doesn't feel like a job. Like, I love it. It's my therapy first and foremost. Before anything, it's my therapy. And I've been blessed to have people that like listening to my therapy sessions, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how, I guess. And also understanding that there's only one me. And I know it's people's jobs to sell records. So sometimes when something that he does works, I understand the normal thing for everyone to want to do is push in the same direction as that person and try to recreate what that person's done.
Yeah.
What we don't talk about enough is that the most successful artists in the world are very different from each other. I think the industry's gotten very lazy. I think, and I mean this with no disrespect, there are some special people out there, there are some different cases, but the fact that an A&R can go and look at a kid that's just done a million views in one day or under one day and sign him, there's no genius in that. That's just easy. It's a no-brainer.
It's there.
The stat just told you that. It's a no-brainer. Now the real, and managers that just like manage people that are hot in that moment, yeah, that's fine. But do you know when the work really starts? When his buzz starts wearing off, Yeah. Well, he's not doing a million views no more. And you have to actually be creative. But do you know what everyone started doing? They just find another person.
Yeah.
So sometimes I feel like people are nicking a living.
Yeah.
Because...
Off what's hot in that moment and throwing them aside.
If you're sick at your job, yeah, you would find a groundbreaking idea, yeah, to help push his thing.
Yeah.
If the artist is willing. Sometimes it's not always. The artist has to be willing and heads have to be put together and we have to think of art. We have to think of what's not happening. What's not happening right now?
Yeah.
Because everyone always thinks of what's happening. Let's recreate what's happening.
Mate, it happens in the music industry constantly. As soon as Lily Allen blows up, all that's getting signed is female singer-songwriters because they need a new Lily Allen. The reason Lily Allen blew up is because there weren't any like her at the time.
And this is my point. Like, whether I like the music or not, sometimes I can see why something works because there was not that before.
Yeah.
So why... It's too easy to go and get another one of that.
Completely.
So I think I've got an elastic band theory, right?
Yeah.
So you can either, you blow up real quick, super quick, come back super quick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
My elastic band theory is this, like, I've pulled it back for so long and so far that when you let the ball go out, if it's a picture of a catapult.
Yeah.
It just goes for so long, steady flight.
Yeah.
As far as it possibly can.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a rocket.
Yeah.
Rocket came that down fast. Super fast. You know what I'm saying? And I don't really listen to... I'm so obsessed with music, I don't really listen to people's ideologies of what my music should be.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they study music like I study it.
Yeah. I'll start... to wrap things up as we're almost at an hour, but there's two things I want to talk. And number one is hearing you talk of your obsession with music makes me wonder if there's any further plans in acting because you killed it in The Intent too.
Thank you.
And again, it's a big deal to be on the sides of buses and on billboards, particularly as a inspirational thing and a motivational thing. And that will... I don't want to speak for you, but that'll hit differently than a record that does good or a certain amount of views.
Do you know what's weird? Appreciated for my opportunity within acting, but it came about through my obsession with music because I wanted to actually make a mad soundtrack, and then I was offered the main role, and I spoke to my mum, and my mum said to me, "Son, don't block your blessings." Because acting is not something I ever thought about, you know what I'm saying? And my mum said, don't block your blessings. And I had to...
It's a great bit of advice.
I had to audition. Like, I didn't just get it. I auditioned and I got it. That made me feel better.
Yeah.
You know, when I got it, that gave me a bit more confidence. And I didn't go to the intense sets acting like I'm the man and I know everything. I was always asking the actors around me for advice. Every second, because
it's
the way to be, man.
You're there to learn, right? You've done that previously.
Yeah, exactly. Every second, like in between takes, how should I have? You know what I'm saying?
It was yeah.
Really much like that. So I won't blow any more of my blessings by saying I'm not. I don't want to act again. I don't want to. Yeah. No. Do you know what? Hopefully.
You see what comes along.
Yeah,
I mean. Potentially the recording could end there. I've purposely left this at the end in case it's something you don't want to speak on or comment on. But we've spoken about responsible role models. We've spoken about loyalty to the scene and all that kind of thing. Someone that you've had clashes with and had involvement with over the years is Wiley. And there's been some crazy shit on social media recently.
I think that he could have articulated himself much better. I feel like there were some points in the mess.
But it was a mess. It was this stream of consciousness.
Yeah, it was. There were some points within the mess.
Yeah.
I wish he articulated himself a bit better. But one thing I will say is that the example that's been made out of him is absolutely terrible. YouTube being removed, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram. I've never seen anything like this in the time that it's happened. There's people that have been left to spew their hate against blacks and Muslims
for a long time,
and even given platforms to do so.
Yeah,
you know, so it makes you really wonder and think because there are moments where he was basically saying that this was going to happen to him.
Yeah.
And it did, so...
I completely feel you there, because I was watching thinking, furious at the bullshit he was spewing, because there was some hateful just nonsense in there. But then you look at how long someone like Katie, I can't even remember her surname, Katie, what's her name, and Piers Morgan, and just anyone else who have spent a long time controlled, abusing...
Exactly.
..and doing more damage, and the speed at which the first time, really... a British black person was in that kind of controversy, and it was a couple of days.
Exactly.
And again, there should have been, to be clear, there should be damnation, there should be people disagreeing, but it's the difference is very visible.
But I feel like I'm not one for cancel culture, even if it's like against man, because I feel like education needs to happen. You know what I'm saying? People, you know, what we've got right now is loads of... flipping people, hiding behind Twitter and Instagram, self-righteous, thinking they can cancel other people because your skeletons ain't out the closet.
That's what we've got
at the moment, yeah? Like people...
You see that as well. Yeah, I see some people that I've peeped at their skeletons and I'm like, how are you speaking so boldly when I know
what... This is what I'm saying. You've got loads of people, cancel this person and cancel that person. Yeah. And, but what about your skeletons that you're hiding? You know what I'm saying?
It should be nuanced, right? It's fine to call people out. People need to be called. Like, we can't just let that bullshit go by.
Yeah.
But it needs to be called out and addressed appropriately rather than, they're gone.
And then I heard that his PRS is being stopped as well, which I find that, wow. So
I mean, that's crazy because that just shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, like...
The public should be able to make a choice of if we're going to hit his wallet or not.
Yeah.
And if they're choosing not to, it's tracks he's made. Again, I'm not going to defend a single thing because it was there was some bullshit, but it's tracks he's made.
Exactly.
You know, there's your R. Kelly's or whoever else.
Exactly.
Completely different thing, but I can't put on an R. Kelly track now.
Exactly.
Because of hearing the stuff he's done.
Do you know what's crazy about that, Every time I'm listening to R&B, I feel like there's a big hole. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I can't listen to R. Kelly, Oh, bro.
Anyway, let's end it there. Thank you very much, man. It's been a pleasure and it's flown by.
All good. All good.
Nice one.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Getz. I hope you enjoyed that. As said, if this was your first time tuning in, go and check out the Dizzy episode. It's one of the best we've done. Check out the Kano episode. That's also one of my favourites. It's the Kano episode was, I think, a year ago last week. So this is kind of perfectly timed because of their shared experiences. The Wretch episode is wicked. The Mike Skinner episode was one of the early ones. The Roots Maneuver episode was one of the early ones. And that was exciting because I'd not met Roots at all. And he never does any podcasty type long form interviews. And I'm a big fan. So that was cool. Similar with Dizzy, man. He doesn't really do these things. So that was awesome to get him on for. And again, obviously same with Getz. He did a really good podcast episode called... Was it The Breakdown? It's with my boy Jamali Maddox, who's also been on. Check that out if you enjoyed this. The Breakdown, I think it was called. But if you search Jamali Maddox and Getz, it will tell you. Yeah, I'll be back next week. Got loads of good guests on their way. So, I'll see you soon. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.